If you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio. Witch Police Radio. Oh, no, no, no.
Witch Police Radio.
All right, welcome to Witch Police Radio. I'm back with a guest who's been on, I guess this is, what, your third or fourth appearance on the show. You've been on a few times over the years, and we'll get into who you are and what you're up to in a minute. But I guess just to start it off, one of the things I like about having repeat guests on the podcast is I'll have anyone on more than once if they're doing something interesting. And I think you definitely fit in that category, in that every year or so, you're definitely putting out some interesting music. It seems like you kind of have this this routine where you're just sort of constantly releasing new stuff, and there's always something unusual to it or different than the previous one. So I'm always happy to have you on the show. I know you kind of, when we were talking about it earlier, you were like, I don't want to be on too much, but you always have stuff that's worth talking about. So I think it's, I'm always happy to have you back on. So before we launch into it, if you want to introduce yourself, give a bit of a background about who you are, what you do, that'd be a great way to start.
Sure. I appreciate it, Sam. It's great being back. My name is Mike Powell, and I record under the name Closet Judas. I've been recording over the past 7 years here in Manitoba, making non-monetized, lo-fi, what I call post-grunge concept albums. So I've been doing that for the past number of years, and I'm releasing a new album in November. Which is going to be the last part of a trilogy that began back in 2019 with Lunacy and the Second Naivete, followed that up with Entelechy in 2022, and then this November is going to be the completion of that project.
Cool. And I guess, like you mentioned, I mean, it's, you do concept albums. Your records always have more to them. Not only is there's often a storyline that sort of goes through the record, but there's also a lot of supplemental material. There's always explanations for why the songs are written the way they are, what the message is. It's always very explicit. And I kind of like that about it, because you don't leave anything up to sort of, there's no chance to misinterpret what you're talking about. I mean, you do address social issues in a lot of your songs, and it's kind of right there on the page, which is sort of nice, because there's no parsing it, right? You don't just sit there and say, what does that mean? It's you like to have that sort of right out in the open. And this record is no exception.
Yeah, this one in particular, the trilogy that is going to be ultimately called Syzygy, which is talking about the alignment of planetary bodies like the moon, the sun, the earth. In each one of those projects, I wrote to go along with each album. And the idea was that I wanted to explore fictional tales, very small ones, in order to subvert some dominant meta-narratives that I saw as problematic, especially related to religion, which is kind of a background in my past, but just really trying to engage in some moral entrepreneurship to make people think about things for themselves, not just accept what they've been inherited or what's been passed down to them as quote-unquote true. And just really allow people the permission to question things for themselves, because I think that that's very important, especially given the day and age that we live in, when so much of our lives are in turmoil because of this extremism that we see on often both sides.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So what is your, I mean, without getting too much into it, because we're here to talk about the record, but what is your background as far as that topic? I mean, you very explicitly mentioned religion in this project, particularly as being sort of a driving force behind, or your views on religion, at least, a driving force behind sort of this whole trilogy of music. So what is the what's the backstory there, like on your personal end?
Yeah, my I guess inherited beliefs were Christian. I grew up kind of in that world, and was in various parts of that world over the past number of years. This particular project, Sonder, I tongue-in-cheek called an ode to nihilism.
Okay.
Which is just, I'm trying to explore the idea of rejecting religion, and really leaning hard into existentialism, because I think, especially, I think when it comes to criticizing or critiquing something, I think it often makes the most sense when you can do that from within, or at least from within a tradition that you're part of.
Yeah.
It's one thing to stand outside of another faith tradition and say, well, this is completely wrong, but not having explored it or not having any reference point to it. But when you come from a particular background that you're very familiar with those things, I think there's a lot more authenticity when you pull it apart and see what works and what doesn't, throw things out, maybe save other things.
Yeah.
But I've often found over the past number of years where I have been pulling it apart and burning it down, that there's not a lot left afterwards. So that doesn't connect with a lot of people. But I think for me, especially with this particular project, really wanting to question taken for granted systems. Why do we put our faith or trust in those things when often they aren't examined in a depth that I think it deserves or merits?
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're right about being able to observe it from within, because, I mean, I find this question about your focus on religion here interesting, because I'm not a religious person. I didn't grow up with any religious background whatsoever. So I am absolutely looking at this from an outside perspective. So my take on what Christianity is and what religion is very different from yours, because it's always seemed kind of ridiculous to me, you know, like, I mean, a lot of aspects of it seem like, why would anyone believe this? But obviously, having grown up in it and having been exposed to a lot more of it, you're going to look at it differently, because you at one point presumably did believe in a lot of this stuff, right? And so you've had to come to where you are now sort of on your own, whereas I was just sort of, this is how it is, you know?
Exactly. And I think a lot of times we latch on to identity markers, whether it's some type of naming, like you're part of this or that group.
Yeah.
The idea of siding with one, you know, group or another. And I just find every single time that happens, people just get killed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the identity is so tied to the beliefs and the defense of those beliefs, and it often ends in genocide on many sides in history. When you take a look at, especially, like, I'll just take an example that isn't maybe as politically charged today, the history of Northern Ireland.
Sure.
We have the Catholic and the Protestant divide. You have people who are loyal to the crown, in other words, Britain, who are often in a lot of the northern part of Israel. And you have people in the south who are Irish, the Republicans, and the West. And this constant back and forth of defending one's faith against those who are opposed to your particular beliefs, whether it's political, whether it's religious,
yeah,
that kind of thing. So many people needlessly died over the years and continue to in different places around the world, just because they're unwilling to say, maybe I don't really need to align myself with this political group, religion, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe we can be kind humans to one another and see each other as just, you know, going through the same thing.
Don't bother asking the question. By now you know the response. It's a waste of our time. It needs no renaissance. You'll never know reasons why. You'll always be in the dark. Useless to be obsessed about what is a lark. But you say we're convinced of the things we heard from on high. So is the lunatic who believes they can fly. That's right, we're calling you mad. No other word illustrates the depth of psychosis you force on your offlink.
That really gets to the idea of behind the name Sonder. Sonder is a word that means, it's that moment of recognition. Like, I don't know if you've experienced it, where you're like walking down the street or you're driving your car and you see another person and you realize in that split second that they have had a life just as complex of you as you, just as meaningful, you know,
yeah, no.
The relationships. And in that moment, there's empathy. You realize this person has struggles just as I do. They've had wins just as I have.
Yeah, sure.
Can't we just see past a lot of the labels that make things problematic in life?
Well, and at a much smaller level, a much maybe less consequential level, is social media has made everyone sort of clinging to whatever group they feel they belong to, vocally and aggressively almost. It's on a micro level. Obviously, you know, someone tweeting an insult to someone isn't going to, no one's hopefully dying from that. But yeah, it's the same, I think, attitude, just on a much smaller, more sort of personal one-on-one level.
Exactly. And with my albums, one of the reasons I really try to emphasize the idea of story is because this type of delivery method, I guess, is a bit more subversive because you can relate to it. It doesn't come across as preachy or judgmental or something like that, but you can have that permission to explore ideas. Like similar to what Philip Pullman did with his Dark Materials, like the Golden Compass series.
Yeah.
Like exploring ideas like that, but in my albums in a very micro form. So, you know, very short, very to the point. And yeah, I provide a lot of explanations about it as well, but want people to really, you know, think about it for themselves.
Yeah. Well, as far as the explanation go, I mean, I know a lot of your stuff has come with, like, you know, thick documents sort of going over every aspect of what's happening and what this is a reference to and what your thoughts are on X, Y, and Z topics. But I mean, the stuff you have on Bandcamp now from this record, you have the songs and then you have the lyrics and then you also have sort of the audio explanation of what the song is about and then what the background is and all that. So those are, I was going to ask you about those because it's not just you sort of reading something you prepared. There's an artistic element to it as well. And I mean, you know, one of the descriptions had like there's some echo happening on certain words, and then there's sort of this atmospheric background sound. What goes into that? How do you decide what you want to do artistically with those? Because they could very well just be, here's the document, I'm reading it, listen to the words, right?
Yeah, I want it to be a bit more artistic and philosophical at the same time, because I think both of them, there's a hybrid that I try to bring into things. With each project, I try to approach it in a little different way. This particular one, I asked an Irish philosopher named Peter Rollins to read the story that I wrote. He's a favorite author of mine. A lot of his work, he does what's called pyrotheology, which is just as it sounds, you burn everything, see what remains. If anything is good, you keep it. If it's not, then it wasn't meant to be, you know, to survive. But so I asked him if he would read it. And then I thought I could have an explanation pasted on after that. But I thought it would be good to almost, you know, a few lines at a time, give people an opportunity just to kind of think about it, and then just give a bit of an explanation about what I was thinking related to the writing of the story that I wrote. So with the explanation, sometimes, like with my album Subaltern, I integrated explanations within the entire album. This next album that I'm working on, I'm probably just going to tag it on the end. So that if people want to delve into the behind the scenes aspect of it, they can. But if they just want the music, then they can just listen to that for themselves. But a lot of it is going to come through in the lyrics as well, because I think this one in particular is probably the most like a concept album that I've ever made, in terms of it being actually thought out in order, rather than a whole bunch of songs relating to the big theme, but maybe not telling the story as closely.
Do you have a sense, just from feedback or whatever, of whether people actually are consuming sort of both aspects of this? Or are there some people that you know are just sort of listening to the songs, enjoying the songs for what they are at face value, and not necessarily going into the behind-the-scenes stuff?
I'm actually not entirely sure. I don't keep a really close look at the stats behind the things that I release. You know, once in a while I check it out.
Yeah.
But it's I think that's the thing with art. You create it, you put it out there, you hope it resonates. I have had, you know, some feedback that they, you know, some people have really enjoyed kind of the philosophical aspect of it. Sometimes, you know, the musical aspect. That's a good question. I don't actually really know what lands better. The music, the philosophy, or both.
Your friend, the Irish guy, being involved in that part of it, and I mean, looking at the credits, you have drum loops provided by an outside person. Have you? I mean, I know this is it's a very, very much a solo project, but do you feel like you're slowly sort of opening this up to more collaboration? I know this is not the first time you've done collaborative stuff, but it seems like, you know, maybe as you go along, there's more people sort of getting slightly involved in what you do.
It is true. You mentioned drum loops. I don't do drumming myself. Kyle Kreiza, he's a drummer out of Saskatoon, actually. I found his work via Reddit a few years back and didn't even realize that he was Canadian. So shout out to him. He just makes really great loops. And since it's something that I don't do, I definitely appreciate being able to integrate that into my work. But yeah, I think like one of the most collaborative projects that I've done over the past number of years, and one of the best experiences, was working with the Famous Sandhogs. We released a double single, a split single.
Yeah.
A few years back, and that was great. He recorded all of the tracks and sent them to me, and I mixed them and I did the same. And that was, it was super collaborative, and I'm really happy with how that turned out. But yeah, I think there's a lot of value in working with others. I often don't. There's an artist by the name David Bazan, who records under the name Pedro the Lion.
Sure.
He wrote a song a number of years back called Fewer Moving Parts, and the lyrics go, fewer moving parts mean fewer broken pieces. And I think in many ways I have isolated myself and done things solo for a number of years just because it's easier.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about schedules, that kind of thing. But there definitely is value in collaborating. And I think when you do collaborate, you do open up that world a little bigger and can get feedback in terms of like maybe thinking about the song structure differently or, you know, doing, you know, this or that in a unique way.
Well, when it comes to those collaborations and the actual structure of the songs, the sound of the songs, how much communication do you have? For example, the drum loops, right? I mean, how much of that are you directing sort of what you want to hear, or how much of it is him just sending you loops and you building on those?
The drum loops themselves are just like a download that you would get a whole bunch of stems. And
oh, cool.
Then you can just like, Kyle's never made a whole series for me. I've just taken his samples and then I order them in the way that I want them to sound. So the actual process creatively is still, you know, very much me directing things, but just taking the elements that resonate with me to create the soundscape that I'm looking for.
Well, what does resonate with you? I mean, I know that, you know, this is kind of this, there's elements of grunge and alt rock and all these things that we've talked about before sort of within the sound, but what are you, I mean, when it comes to drums, what are you looking for? Because like you said, that's not something you play, right? So you're obviously, there's something in your head that you're hearing with these songs that you want to find. Like, how do you know when you found the right loop to record the rest of your music with?
I think I'm always taken back to like when I had a Walkman in junior high.
Yeah.
And when you get that song that gives you that forward momentum to walk at like a, you know, a pace where you feel like something is going on, I think for me that's the best way to describe what I'm looking for when it comes to drums. Something that has really good rhythm, that has a beat that just connects in a kind of at a soul level. It is hard to describe unless you hear it.
Yeah.
But then I think at the beginning of the process when I'm recording, I just listen to a whole ton of loops and start categorizing this one sound. This one doesn't quite connect.
Yeah.
But then even though that one might not connect, if it's the same BPM, I can layer it on top of the one that does. And then I've discovered some interesting sounds that way as well.
Well, it sounds like a lot of the ones on this record, and this might be just my perception of it. I have to listen to it again to see if I'm right, but it sounds very much kind of, what's the word? I guess almost relentless rhythms. Like, I mean, they're very driving. They're very, like you said, that forward momentum is really strong.
Yep.
And you don't hear a lot of, you know, kind of sparse, minimalist sort of drums on this record. So obviously that kind of focused, direct sort of rhythmic thing is what you're looking for, right?
Yeah, this one, I really wanted it to be very pointed and concise, even though I would consider it a full-length album. It's got six tracks, like with songs on them, but technically it's seven songs because I re-recorded an old one from Lunacy. But there's also going to be a whole bunch of other tracks that are interspersed throughout. But I forget where I was going with that one.
It's all good. We can come back to it.
yeah.
So, you know, again, I know that this is the way you do things is you record it yourself, you put it out online, you don't accept any money for it. It's this sort of little free music ecosystem you've created, which is great. I like your dedication to that. And again, like, because this is a recording project, not a live project, is this still something that you're not planning on performing at any point? Are you still happy just doing this sort of in the home studio?
Yeah, for the most part, I still probably will do some live streams. Over, I guess, the past 4 years, I've done probably 25 or 26 live streams just to share some of the songs that I released or was working on. There's one potential gig that I may pursue, or I was asked to consider for 2025, and that may or may not happen.
Cool.
But I'll let people know on my socials if it does transpire or not. But I'm just as happy to record in my basement here.
Yeah.
And yeah, just work through things myself. When I have an idea or when I want to work on a new project, it brings a lot of satisfaction to me when I'm creating music, because it's one of those things that's unique in the world where I'm able to make something that's never been made before. Like, it may totally. Have things that I draw from that grunge era, but it's reconfigured in a way that is personal and unique to this time and space.
Yeah, definitely. And it's available perpetually online too, so people can find it well out of the context that it was written in. I mean, you have some albums up there now on Bandcamp that are, I'm sure, you know, if you look back at what you were talking about, what you were focused on, what you were inspired by for these songs, I mean, some things stay the same, unfortunately. And some of these social issues you talk about have never really changed in decades.
Exactly. But...
Do you ever go back and listen to some of these older ones and then sort of see how your point of view has changed at all, if it has?
Yeah, I don't go back because I've been recording music for a long time.
Like, yeah, before you even came to Manitoba, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, Closet Judas has existed since 2007. I don't often go back to those earlier demos or things that I released, not because I don't think they were valuable, but yeah, they just don't connect in the way that the recent stuff does. But as for the stuff that I've recorded since I moved out here in 2017, yeah, I revisit it quite a bit. I often hear artists say that they hate listening to their own stuff, or just they don't, you know, want to, but I actually really enjoy revisiting things because it is about reconnecting with that time in my life where I was wrestling with this or that, and seeing where I am now. And I think it's a helpful process. And I think also I make music that I want to hear that as an artist. So I actually don't think it's very strange to listen to things that you've made, appreciating your own art. It's something that I love doing.
And you're in a position where you're able to do that because of the, you know, not accepting money for what you do and not playing a lot of shows other than live streams. You can do that. You can get away with, not get away with, but you can listen to your own work and enjoy it in maybe a way that someone who is trying to do it as a business or trying to do it as a career can't.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
What is the, the good thing about this being a podcast, and I'm sure I said this last time you were on too, is that someone could hear it the day it comes out, at which point the record is imminent, or they could hear it 3 years from now, and who knows what you're up to then. So what's the best way to find you online and find out what you're up to and hear this kind of ever-growing catalog of Closet Judas records?
You can find me online, anything under Closet Judas. I'm most active on Instagram. Who knows what will happen in the years to come. But yeah, Closet Judas is where you can find me, and Bandcamp is where I release most of my albums exclusively, just through Bandcamp. There's only one album that you can find on all streaming platforms, and that's Subaltern.
Okay.
That was more of a test or concession to my kids. They wanted me to put an album on with the song that they really liked. I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm not making money from this anyway, and neither will the streaming services.
No, so, I get like 0.000 something cents. Yeah.
So that one's out there, but all of my other stuff's at closetjudas.bandcamp.
Cool. And then what are the details about this release again? Just to remind about when this is coming out, and obviously people can find it on Bandcamp.
Yeah, two singles have dropped already. And with the singles as well, I like doing things that aren't just on the album. So maybe it's a different version of the song, or maybe something, a little twist. So it's not just repeated material. But the new album, Sonder, is going to be coming out November 15th. And I'm going to release one B-side from that project. And I remember what I was talking about earlier, just wanting to create that album that was just very like focused and like energetic. The song that I wrote just didn't fit that. And I don't think I've ever released an actual B-side, but this one will be that. I'm going to put that out at the beginning of December.
Cool.
I'm going to, and then all of the albums as a trilogy are going to come out on the Black Moon of December, December 30th, Syzygy.
Okay.
Everything from that project will be available in one spot.
Do you encourage people to listen to it as a single? I mean, I know it's a lot of listening, it's a lot of songs, but like, do you think it's important to listen to it sort of as a single package now that you've recorded all of it and then it's sort of all finished out there?
I don't know, like the Syzygy trilogy, like I think it would be an interesting arc to listen to it in that way, because I'm going to write a longer short story that goes into a little more detail about all of those storylines that are involved in that. I'm one who likes listening to albums all the way through. I don't make playlists. I know
too,
a lot of people do.
I'm on board with you.
But I think there's something valuable in listening something from start to finish. And if people don't listen to the entire trilogy start to finish, I would suggest, check out the EP Entelechy, which is just three songs, or Lunacy and the second Naivete, which was, I think one of the things that I'm most proud of making back, 5 years ago. But start to finish, that's always my recommendation.